We are joined right now by a baseball columnist for the New York Post. He is also an MLB Network insider. A ton to talk to Joel Sherman about. Joel, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Josh. Joel, I should say. I was just talking about another Josh. Great to have you on. Joel, let me ask you this. There was a lot of buzz about the Yankees potentially making a move for Manny Machado. Then he goes 3-for-4 last night with a couple of home runs against New York. You spoke with Brian Cashman yesterday. He was not that interested in talking about Machado. How would you describe his mood overall, and how is he going to approach the next few weeks before the deadline?
Yeah, so I would think of it a little bit like Brian Cashman needs a couch, has shown up in a furniture store, and there's no couches available.
Right.
What they need most is a high-end starting pitcher. They have one of the best starters in the sport, Luis Severino, and their rotation is a little Gladys Knight in the Pips. He's Gladys Knight, and then there's a bunch of Pips who are not really trustworthy. And as they're trying to track down the Red Sox for the rest of this season and think about playoff series, they'd like someone else to be in there. The only real potential guys you can imagine being in the trade market in the next 3 weeks are Jake DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard from the Mets. A, I don't believe, Jim, that the Mets are hankering certainly to trade DeGrom, and I don't know that there's enough time. Syndergaard hasn't even made it a start yet off of the DL to do it. And then I think if the Mets were ranking 1 to 29, the teams they were most likely to make a trade with, the Yankees would be 29 with a downward-facing bullet. They just don't want to help the team on the other side of the Triborough Bridge. So when it comes to a high-end starting pitcher, that is might not be in this marketplace. And so the question becomes, if you can't stop teams from scoring, do you try to then score more by getting Machado? Or do you try to take what's already, I think you can make a pretty strong argument, the best bullpen in the major leagues with the Yankees, and making it even stronger to shorten the amount of work needed by the non-Severino part of the rotation? And I think that's what the exercise the Yankees are essentially going through, Jim, now for the next 3 weeks is they know they've got a real battle here to avoid a one-game playoff, to try to beat out the Red Sox to at least get into a division series. But they also know they have a team that's probably good enough to win a couple of series and maybe even a championship in October. And so they want to do everything possible to maximize that without too badly damaging their near future. And I think that's all the balls that Brian Cashman is juggling, trying to figure out what to do here now over the next 3 weeks.
Joel Sherman joining us. All right, so a lot to unpack there, Joel. As you pointed out also, if we go back to the offseason, the Yankees inquired about Giancarlo Stanton, but it was not a real need at that time. Then they made the move because the Stanton market collapsed and they were able to get a good deal. Could you see a deal for Machado following a similar path, or is there just too much interest in him?
Yeah, so I think there will be some similarities, Jim. I mean, Brian Cashman, his greatest success as a trader to a large degree is his patience. He's willing and his ability to see the field and see like, is this market going to collapse? And if so, are we going to be sitting here as the team with the money and the prospects, but not as much money and prospects that we thought might have been needed in the first place? It's almost exactly what happened in the Stanton situation, where it was like it was kind of going to be the Yankees or nothing for the Marlins. And rather than get nothing and run the risk of continuing to pay the highest, you know, largest contract in history, the Marlins traded him to the Yankees. There's a lot of examples of that with Brian Cashman through his two decades plus of being the GM. I don't think this market will completely collapse, because even if we say a walk-year position player in this age in baseball doesn't get as much as it used to. Think about J.D. Martinez last year, going from Detroit to Arizona for three very middling prospects. The thing that would be different between Machado and, say, Martinez is he plays a more valuable position, either shortstop or he'd have to play third base for the Yankees as much as he might protest against it. And I think as opposed to Martinez, there are a couple of teams that see how Machado could really impact the rest of the season. Arizona again, the Dodgers, perhaps the Indians, the Phillies, the Yankees, perhaps the Braves. So all you need is a couple of teams, even bidding it up a little. I don't know that you'll get 100 cents on the dollar for someone as talented as Machado, but you'll get something more than J.D. Martinez brought.
Joel Sherman joining us. All right, Joel, let me get your thoughts on what's going on out here in the Los Angeles Angels situation. They're two games over 500. They're currently 10 games out of a wild card spot. They've had a ton of injuries this year. So where do you think the Angels are right now as the trade deadline approaches? And then how big of an impact could they play in trade talks?
Yeah, I think they're in one of the worst positions you could be in. They're over 500, which usually gives you a sense you're in it. But I think if you looked at it from 20,000 feet, you'd say they got five more games this month against Seattle. They won the game yesterday. I think if they don't run the field on it, 6-0, maybe 5-1, begin to make a real serious crack in this. How would they begin to make up that ground? Plus, by not playing great, they've let Oakland get ahead of them in the wild card standings. Amazingly, they've let the Tampa Bay Rays get ahead of them in the standings. So that's, they're not in a great place. But they have Mike Trout, and, part of every discussion is context. And one of the things you're always thinking with the Angels is, what do we have to do to make sure we keep this guy beyond 2020 when his contract runs out? And I think at some point for a team that in his first six seasons, when he was clearly the best player in the sport, only played in one playoff series, they're going to have to show the ability to win in some kind of serial way. So it's hard to become sellers. And by the way, even if they wanted to become sellers, the most obvious valuable thing they had to sell got hurt again last night in Garrett Richards. And so to me, that leaves them kind of like betwixt and between, not in a great situation. And so I kind of feel like if they can't trade Richards, they'll just do whatever they can to kind of like have an upset here and make up the ground.
We're talking to Joel Sherman. Joel, to that point, what about Mike Trout? I mean, it's another season where he may not play postseason baseball. If that's the case, how big of a loss is that from the perspective of marketing and growing the game?
Well, I mean, I would say this, Jim, and I know, you obviously do a show about all sports. What if I told you every year in the NBA, LeBron James never made the playoffs?
Sure.
Or Aaron Rodgers never made the playoffs?
Right.
At some point, that would be detrimental to the NBA, detrimental to the NFL. The things like the All-Star game and the postseason are the platform from which the sport sells broadly. There's a lot of passionate fans that follow year-round and specifically follow their team. It's the most parochial of our sports. So, fans are very passionate, but like a fan in, Southern California might not care what's going on with Milwaukee, but suddenly they'll notice it come October. Hey, it's the playoffs. Let's watch in a bar. Let's watch someplace. And to not have Mike Trout on that stage has been, not only bad for the Angels, but very bad for baseball because he's our Mickey Mantle. He's a great player who we never get to see play the biggest games.
Joel Sherman joining us for a few more moments. Joel, you had a piece over the weekend that I thought was great. You might become the first person in history to compare Bryce Harper and Jeb Bush. Lay this out for me. What are the similarities you see in Jeb Bush and Bryce Harper?
Yeah, I don't know if your audience is old enough but for me to make another comparison, but I felt a little bit like Evel Knievel going up over buses trying to make that comparison.
Man, Joel, can I interrupt? I loved Evel Knievel. I am old enough. That was my guy, so I see it working. I love it.
My favorite thing would be Frank Gifford running up in the turtleneck afterwards.
Right.
So my comparison was essentially we started to think about Bryce Harper's free agency like a presidential candidacy ago, like 3-4 years. We saw it coming on the horizon. He was going to finish this season at 25, so go out into free agency for his age 26 season. He was the first pick in the draft. He's a national player in a sport that doesn't have a lot of national players. He's as talented a baseball player as there is playing the sport, maybe aside from Trout, but certainly like beyond results, just unbelievably talented. And we've been thinking about, is he going to get $300 million, $400 million, $500 million? And now in this platform year, this walk season, Jeb Bush, we thought was, he's going to be, the Republican nominee. And we probably thought that for 3 years before the election and 2 years before the election. And then suddenly he was running for the election. And, he got termed low energy by Trump and it stuck and he couldn't win primaries. And suddenly the guy we thought was going to easily walk to a nomination was out. And low energy is like low batting average. like Bryce Harper can't get that much over like about 215, 220 this year. It's been lower than that a lot of the season. And then the question becomes, do people see beyond the numbers? I talked to his agent, Scott Boras. You know, he's still being walked at a rate where the other team fears him. He's still a power hitter, you know, with 20-plus homers. His line drive rate is the same as it's ever been. So will other teams look at that and the potential to market and the fact that he's still only 26 and he still gets the 300, 400, 500? Or have we been waiting for this candidacy that's never going to fire completely? Because the reality is, as opposed to Mike Trout, who we used to compare him to, Jim, like who's better, Trout or Harper? Trout is great every year. Harper's had one great, completely healthy season, 2015, when he won the National League MVP. There's been hints of other ones, or he's been having good years and he's gotten hurt like he did last year. But just one completely great, healthy season. And so you weigh potential and fame and great skill against that reality. And now all of a sudden, he becomes the most, what the column was about, he's the most interesting player for the second half of this season because it's his last chance to throw something up on the board to say, I am that $300, $400, $500 million player. And by the way, get the Nationals at least both into the playoffs again because they're not in first place and beyond the first round for the first time in his career for an organization, by the way, that either as the Montreal Expos or the Nationals has never even played in the World Series. So to me, there's a lot on his plate, and it makes him the most fascinating guy of the second half of the season.
No doubt, and the numbers do not lie, and they're not good. He's hitting 215 for the year, 188 in June, 175 in July, so the second half is going to be fascinating. He is a baseball columnist for the New York Post. He is an MLB Network insider, Joel Sherman, my guest. Joel, so good to have you back. Thank you very much. Always good to talk baseball with you, Joel.
And it's always good to talk to you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You too, and I love an Evel Knievel reference. You know that. If you know anything about this show, you know I'm all about that.